Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/Wondery and use code Wondery for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/Wondery, code Wondery.
Life is full of personal wins, whether it's cleaning your house, getting that dream car, or checking off your to-do list. Winning at life is a great feeling. And with the State Farm Personal Price Plan, you can keep winning when you create an affordable price just for you by bundling home and auto. So give yourself a round of applause. Talk to a State Farm agent today to learn how you can bundle and save with the Personal Price Plan. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Prices are based on rating plans that vary by state. Coverage options are selected by the customer. Availability, amount of discounts and savings, and eligibility vary by state.
Welcome to the ID10T podcast number 1133. Sunday nights, 10 p.m. 9 Central, Talking Dead on AMC. Monday nights, 10, 9 Central, The Wall on NBC. I host both of those things. So I don't know, if you got some time, maybe check them out. Nothing wrong with a little self-promotion, just a touch. Okay, that's enough. That's enough self-promotion. Now let's talk about promotion for you, the ID10T community. Events at ID10T.com for the Corkboard. This comes from Aaron, who writes, I have a pretty dull, boring 9-to-5 job, and after this past year and a half of doing it at home, I was inspired to create something that would hopefully bring a little happiness, joy, laughter, and health into my life, and others if they watch. I started a YouTube channel for my 365-day experiment. Would love for you to pass it along to your listeners. I'm a nerd from Boston living in Los Angeles. Two cities, one girl. I love going to SoCal theme parks, Disneyland, DCA, Universal Studios, Hollywood, CityWalk. All the conventions, Comic-Con, WonderCon, CatCon, CoffeeCon, LA Comic-Con, D23, Star Wars Celebration. I'm challenging myself to 365 days of health, fun, enjoyment, and adventures, local and far, cool videos, and all the Star Wars, Disney, Marvel content you can take. It's called the Aaron Space, E-R-I-N, and I'm trying to get 100 subscribers in 100 days. That's great, Aaron. Thank you so much for sharing, and hopefully this will help. So if you go to YouTube and you type in The Aaron Space, and Aaron is spelled E-R-I-N. Thank you again, Aaron, for sharing. And to anyone else, events at ID10T.com for your thing on the Corkboard. This episode is Coleman Domingo, who years ago, well, actually I know when, it was 5 years ago, Coleman came on the podcast, Fear the Walking Dead, which is a show that he is on. He plays Victor Strand, and he's phenomenal, came on this podcast. And we hit it off, like, it was just magical. And Lydia and I were getting married, like, a week later. And after the podcast, I was like, do you want to come to our wedding? And he said, absolutely. Coleman and his husband, Raul, came to our wedding, and we became really close friends with them, and we've been on vacations together and spent so much wonderful time. They're just such amazing people, and my wife Lydia and I absolutely adore them. And Coleman's career is so on fire right now. I mean, he's on Fear the Walking Dead, like I said. That comes back October 17th. He's also in Euphoria. He's also has a movie out called Zola, and he also has Candyman, which is fantastic, by the way. Lydia and I saw it. We loved it. It is in theaters the day of the posting of this podcast, which is August 27th. And even beyond that, I believe he sold a show to AMC that he's going to write and direct. And again, like I said, he's just doing a million other things. So yes, on a personal level, I love Coleman to pieces. And also on a professional level, as a creator, he really inspires me, you know? And I think he will inspire you too. Like, whatever it is that you're working on or want to achieve, or even just, you know, figuring out who you are so you can, you know, achieve whatever it is that you want, or whatever it is, Coleman is just such a fantastic role model. pleasure to have Coleman Domingo back on the ID10T podcast number 1133, which begins right now. Oh, wait, almost begins right now. Quick spoiler alert. We do talk about Fear the Walking Dead, some things that happen on the most recent season. So if you're not caught up to the most recent season of Fear the Walking Dead, then maybe hit the pause button if that is important to you, if you want to watch that and then come back. So that is the fair spoiler warning for Fear the Walking Dead. And now we start the thing.
Initiating ID10T protocol.
Coleman Domingo.
Hey, Chris Hardwick with the smooth voice and microphone.
I know. I pulled out the fancy microphone.
You went all out today. I went all out with my ear pods that were from HBO. They keep that on here, so it's nice. Well,
this is the era we're in now, the era of Zooms and everyone being their own audio engineers and camera lighting. And
yes, all of it.
I'm actually recording in the podcast room, which I haven't done for a long time. This was the room that people used to actually show up to record the podcast. And we have these really fancy mics that Lydia got me as a present one year. And so,
it'll like, never be used again. No, I'm totally kidding. No. It will be used again. They will be used again. Yes, they will.
You know, I have to say though, no, it's not at all. It's been pretty, I haven't done any in-person podcasts yet, not since February of 2020, but this really has, like, I think you're in Texas, right? So this, you wouldn't have been able to do the podcast today if you had to show up in person. I don't know when you'd be back.
Right. So isn't it something though, that the things that we thought were so foreign before that we thought we needed to happen. And I'm sure there is that special magic that happens when you're in a room together, but I think that we've all learned to sort of like become a bit more personal on this impersonal device.
Yeah. I mean, I do think we shouldn't become too reliant on it though. I think I think moving forward, we'll see a sort of a hybridized version of like, oh, you know, if you can make it to a meeting in person, great. If you can't for whatever reason, or if it just, or if they just, it just needs to happen quickly, then this is a completely, you know, reasonable solution for that. But, you know, I have to say, having, you know, gotten together with small groups of friends here and there, the in-person thing is just so nice.
I mean, it is so good. As well, it's in-person with friends. When it comes to meetings, I'm still like, I'm of the mind that like any meeting that has to take place in Santa Monica and, you know, I live in South Beach, LA, it's still virtually. I don't really need to make that meeting.
Yeah, I mean, listen, not to become the Californian sketch on SNL, but getting to Santa Monica for a meeting, if you're not a West Sider in Los Angeles, is, I mean, it's almost a camping trip where you have to
plan a whole day. You have to plan your whole day out. You're like, well, that's it. I guess I'll see you. You're like, should I book a hotel room down there?
Do I just stay down there? I mean, the meeting's over at 5. I mean, like, I might as well just have dinner down.
You may as well, because the day's over. You won't get home till like 10.
Not getting back till Saturday. Honey, I'm going to come. I'll see you on Monday. I have a meeting in Santa Monica on Friday.
I have a 20-minute meeting in Santa Monica. For some shit that I don't want to do.
I'm going to have to park in a massive parking structure. The parking validation is weird. I'm going to get a stack of
those things to exit.
Of those coupons, because we haven't come up with a better system in our technology where we have to load in 10 of those things. And then we have to, you know, I'll wait in the waiting room for about 40 minutes. The meeting will be 20. I'll get back out. It'll be 5:20. Yeah. And then at that point, I think I just have to live in Santa Monica because I don't want to face having to get home again. There is no easy way.
No, there's no easy way with that. There's none. I think so. That part of the journey, I think I'm sort of like, I'll put a pin in it for wanting that part of my life to restart.
Yeah. I do not blame you. I assume you're down working on Fear right now.
I am. I'm in lovely Austin, Texas. We're working on season 7 of Fear the Walking Dead. And we've been having a great fucking time. To be honest, I feel like the show has, I don't know, Ian and Andrew are like writing with like new blood. It's like they're just like really blowing the top off of the whole genre now. I think that now that they truly understand, not that they didn't understand before, but we're not tethered to the comic book. So we can go as far as we want. And at the end of season 6, we have a nuclear fallout. A nuclear, missile goes off, and also you're playing with that. We're playing with landscape. We're playing with these other high stakes thing. Like you can't play low stakes with a nuclear bomb that just went off.
That was a pretty remarkable. That was a pretty remarkable thing, because I think you're watching and you're like, well, they're not gonna. I mean, I see where this might be headed, but they're not gonna. I mean, they couldn't do that. And then it happens. And you're like, what the fuck just happened, because it's it's just such a crazy, like, oh, they just got used to one apocalypse, but fuck that, double apocalypse, a really incredible story engine to have to write around.
It's really dope, because I think what I've always loved about the show is that it's supposed to respond to the times, right? And so we're dealing with this nuclear fallout where the air is toxic, that you can't breathe. Sounds like last year, right? So, so what do you do? Take cover, protect, figure things out, figure out how you're going to live and survive in this new environment, and do it pretty quickly. And that's what's happening in the show. And that's what I find so exciting, that all the stakes are dialed up like to 1,000 now.
I mean, I'm remembering a time going back to the beginning of the show and meeting this whole, the idea of another Walking Dead show was so new, and it's like, oh, you're about to go on this incredible journey. Now 7 seasons later, it's really hard to believe. And, with World Beyond wrapping up, and then, the first Walking Dead show wrapping up next year. I mean, Fear is like, I don't have any inside information on what the future of Fear is. I don't know, but I assume it's continuing. And it's like, it's been an incredible 7 years.
No show makes it to 7 years. I never thought, if you would have told me, Chris, when I first came on your show and I sat there and I was all happy because I was wearing, Ralph Lauren suits and stuff like that in this apocalyptic show, did I know I'd be doing what I'd be doing now? Absolutely not. I didn't know the storytelling would do that. I didn't know that we would move from location to location. I didn't know that Strand would develop like this character. I didn't know that he would still survive. So this whole journey has been a huge surprise to me. And I've been very grateful and really excited about it. And I think especially with the show that's been going on this long, you have to have a certain amount of investment in it personally, because you are beholden to your character and to the whole story. So they listen to us even more so. They listen to, I'm sure, me, Lenny, Alicia, Jenna, when we have suggestions about things and the kind of story that we want to tell. I mean, especially like, I think me and Alicia, we've been, and Ruben, we've been around the longest. So it's like, I think that they're very interested in thinking, what story do you want to tell? Not just being in service to a story, but what are you interested in as an actor and as a character? So I think they've been really rolling out the red carpet for that this season.
Yeah. And I would like to point out, as I know, as anyone who's listened to the podcast for any length of time and who's heard you on the podcast, before, knows that we are also friends. They know that I adore that Lee and I adore you. And Raul, just as human beings, we absolutely just love you to pieces,
and
watching your career in the past couple of years, I'll even text you sometimes when you'll post on Instagram another like amazing looking movie, and I'm like, when the fuck did you have time to do this? And it's like, Fear the Walking Dead, Euphoria, Ma Rainey's Black Bottom, Zola, it's just like all of these. I don't know where you find the time to do it all, but I also would love to talk to you about, I love your career path because, you know, let me go back a little bit and say, like, do you feel like things are popping right now? What is your perspective on what's been going on the last couple of years? Do you notice a change? Does it feel like it's picked up an enormous amount of momentum, or does it not? Does it feel the same as it always has? What is your perspective on what's going on?
Well, that's a great question. You know, the funny thing is, I've always, even as I've come into this business, in the early 90s, I've always been a polymath. I've always been a multi-hyphenate. I started out as an actor, then I started directing, and then I started writing, and then I started producing. And then I just kept doing that. And then, so a lot of times, different audiences would know me for different things. Like, you can ask any person who loves Broadway musicals, they may just know me from Passing Strange or Scottsboro Boys and those other things, like that New York theater, off-Broadway theater, you name it. Would they know that I did sketch comedy? They might not. Would they know? And then suddenly I have a whole film lane and a television lane and a directing lane, musical lane. So I feel like I've always had these very compartmentalized careers, but now suddenly after, 31 years in this business, it's been amplified even more so, because I think I do recognize, honestly, in the past couple of years that has been a huge amplification of my work. Because for a while, people have been like, they couldn't figure out. They were like, oh, you're that guy. You're in there. They didn't know my name, but they know I pop up in history dramas, you name it, whatever. But now I'm one of these very high profile projects. And I think it's because of, you know, Chris, I've been working for years and I feel like I've been always trying to craft the kind of people I work with. Not only the people who are my friends and colleagues, but the people that I work with. I want to work with people who are willing to take a risk. And so I've been very blessed that my career path has taken me that, to work with these legendary directors and then these up-and-coming directors who are really making a splash with their first, second feature films or new television shows and all. And I feel like I've been in the conversation with these people. And so now that they're part of the zeitgeist, I'm also part of the zeitgeist. Now suddenly it's like Coleman Domingos and everything. Now, did I plan this last year of film rollouts? I did not. I had no idea. It was just, I did these films. People always wonder when I do things. And I'll tell you what it is. Because Alicia Debnam Carey asked me that too. Like, when do you find the time to do this stuff? We shoot Fear the Walking Dead for about 6 to 7 months out of the year. And in between, sometimes I've shot films, like I shot God Committee on my hiatus two seasons ago. While we were on hiatus for Fear for a week and a half, I went to New York and shot this film out. They shot out all my work in a week.
Oh, wow.
Candyman got shot out during the hiatus break, when we have a longer break. That's when I did Candyman. Zola, I think I did that again on a break. Usually on a break, I don't take a break. I know a lot of people may go off and go to Mexico and relax. I think I can do that for 3 days. That's all I got in me. And then I need to go to work. So that's just me. So while everybody else is chilling or spending time, I'm like, I take my husband and we go to another state and I shoot a movie. So that's what I do, or I write a new play or a musical. So that's why I'm always doing something. I'm always doing like four things. If I told you what I was doing right now, it would be ridiculous. It's because I don't even know how I'm doing it, but I know it's got to be very precise. I'm shooting a full season of Fear the Walking Dead while I shot out two episodes of Euphoria on a break, on a hiatus, while I'm prepping for a film that I'm going to do in the fall, while I'm doing writing a television series that I'm going to write and direct.
I saw that. That's amazing. Through the AMC deal.
Yeah. So I'm doing all of it. And I have a musical that I wrote that's going to open in London in about a year. So I'm actually just very scheduled. I schedule everything. And then I also schedule, Chris, I schedule free time as well. Like, there'll be times when I come back home and I'm like, oh, that day is booked out. What's it booked out for? Hanging with a friend, going for a hike. That's it. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So you have to do that too. So everything's very well coordinated. And but I do recognize that this is it seems to be a really big time in my career. And I absolutely recognize it.
Well, that's good, because it's, you know, the trap is to be consumed by it, because if you get all these opportunities,
And, you know, you're like, well, I can't say no to, I mean, like, I've been working, you know, like I should, I feel like I should take, you know, like that would be fun. But sometimes it can be at the expense of your life or your peace, you know, your mental health and, or just maintaining a balance, which is very difficult. And, you know, it's easy to think that, you know, the business is the be all end all of everything to get sucked into it. And then, you know, especially coming out of the last year and realizing like, oh yeah, it's important for sure. But it's, you know, like, but there are life things that are also important. So it's nice to hear that you also take the time for yourself and your personal relationships.
And now that things have picked up again, I think it's even more important that we have to press the pause button. We have to tell our teams as well. Everybody gets, but also in a moment like this, everyone's excited and enthusiastic. I'm getting lots of offers. And it's funny because even with the real estate that I have available, I actually want to fill it with things that I want to do. It's nice to get an offer of something outside of you, but I'm like, well, I'm creating this thing here. I want to direct this film and do that. And then I had a conversation with the producer. He said, well, what if, you know, Spielberg calls up and offers you this role? I said, so that's going to compete with the thing that I've been developing myself? That doesn't make sense.
Right.
I said, I think that's why you work so hard and have more agency in this industry, is so you can do the things you want to do. So it's from the inside out, not from the outside in. That's the way I've always built from that way. And so the idea of like, well, this is going to get me more opportunities. I'm like, no, this will help me create more opportunities for myself.
Support for this show comes from Atlassian. Atlassian software like Jira, Confluence, and Loom help power the collaboration needed for teams to accomplish what would otherwise be impossible alone. Because individually we're great, but together we're so much better. That's why millions of teams around the world, including 75% of the Fortune 500, trust Atlassian software for everything from space exploration and green energy to delivering pizzas and podcasts. Whether you're a team of 2, 200, or 2 million, Atlassian software is built to help keep you connected and moving together as one.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app today to get free delivery on your first three orders, while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
See, it's good to have a kind of a guiding principle or a personal directive. And a lot of times, I think the lack of it, we allow, in the absence of that, we sort of just let ourselves be, you know, pulled in any direction that happens, and then all of a sudden, you know, can be overwhelmed. But some of that also, I think, comes with a bit of wisdom over time when you kind of learn who you are and what you want, and asking that core question, who am I and what do I want? And if you kind of know that, then I think it does make a lot of the decision making easier, because you can just say like, oh, well, does this feel like it falls within that sphere that I have kind of, you know, and the flexibility of stepping outside that sphere if something really remarkable that you want to try comes along. But in general, you know, it's, and I've, as long as I've known you, you've always seemed very focused. You know, you know who you are, you know what you want, and you choose accordingly. And I think that is also one of your legacies, and something that I think people should look to and be inspired by, because you know, it's like our time, how much time do we get? Who knows? So be happy, you know, like make choices that are meaningful to you and enjoy it.
You know, Chris, I wonder, you just said something that made me think of something I told someone recently. I've had the unfortunate events of losing both my parents in 2006. And then even recently, I lost one of my best friends to a cancer. In February. And it's always those reminders. And I think we got to keep reminding ourselves that, like, this time is precious, man. What are you going to do with the time that you have? You know, I always feel like, and this is a true core principle of mine, Chris, and I feel like we've never talked about this, but I do believe that, like, my whole day is designed with me hopefully feeling like if I close my eyes tonight and didn't wake up, that I did a good job, that I did the things that I wanted to do. I took the trips I wanted to take. I ate what I wanted to eat. I loved the way I wanted to love. I had the friendships I wanted to have friendships with. I didn't say no or put something off, but I did it. You know what I mean? I feel like if we can do, if our principles about the way we live our life, that's why I feel like it's always been about, and this is, I don't know where it's come from, but it's like, I'll just have to say, I think my mom influenced me in this way. Because it was always important to do something with your mind, your body, and your soul every single day. And that's a very conscious thing. Where it's like, happiness is, and to be happy is a conscious choice. You're like, I'm setting my day up to be happy. Even the way I set up my blinds, because I like to wake up, if I'm not on an alarm clock for an early call, I like to wake up with the sun. Why? I know that makes me happy. I feel part of nature. It's all these guiding principles that helps you, I think, eventually make the choices that you need to make in your career to have a happy, healthy existence. It's all in alignment. It's not one or the other. I think it's all together. The people that you spend time with, and you know, we've all gone through, have been going through this pandemic. And I think that we all made, I'm sure you have, Chris, you made very clear choices about who do you spend time with, who is really deeply connected to you and putting your path on what you want to do, what you want to build, how you want to build it, how you want to love, how do you want, what do you, the people you want to put around your family. And you let a lot of people go. Am I right? Did you let some people go during this pandemic?
Well, I feel like we let a lot of, just not by choice necessarily, but just sort of let a lot of things go. And for the longest time, it was just Lydia and me and the dog.
Yeah.
You know,
but
and my mom, you know. But I don't know. I feel like more so than letting people go, it was just sort of letting some other ideas go about what's important.
Yes.
You know, so maybe if I had friendships with ideas before about like, you know, the business is so important. And again, it is. I'm not saying I don't love doing it, but I do find myself kind of going through a period of like, you know, as Lydia and I embark on trying to start a family and, you know, and all this time that we got to spend together going like, it's good. Like, it's fun to work. I love it. There isn't really anything else I would want to do, but I think I would like to do it because I like it and not because I need it to fill some hole that, you know, or that I need it to feel valid or like I don't exist, you know, and I think some of that, a lot of that, I feel like I'm, you know, kind of, I've kind of scooped out and I just feel like, yeah, I think I just, you know, I like working, but I also like friends. I like being peaceful. I like spending time with Lydia. I like life things. I like to try to, you know, appreciate things and not just get sucked into, you know, especially because when you get so busy, you can just get consumed by just like putting out mini fires all day that don't really mean anything. Oh, this person is this color of these shoes isn't right for this. And I'm like, oh God, you know, like, and I know those, all those things are important and their artistic expression and all, but at the end of the day, I also sort of feel like just don't try not to lose sight of like that those things are important, but they don't mean everything. And try not to lose sight of, you know, do you care about the people that are close to you? Do they love you back? Are they healthy? Are you okay? Or, you know, like all those things. But hearing the way that you set yourself up to, it's not even that you're setting yourself up to succeed. You're like putting the soil in place that is fertile so that the seeds will grow of happiness, and you sort of know that. So it's all of those micro choices that you make of the blinds and the food and what you're eating and who you're around and the clothes and the, everything that sort of puts you in the mindset to then be able to, you know, flourish.
Well, that's you just said it and a whole mouthful. When I tell you, like, I feel like what I've been doing in the past years has been planting many seeds and praying over them, loving them. You don't know how they're going to, you know, you're in the garden. You don't know how it's going to turn out, but you have hope and you have faith. But you know that you tend to it, you know, and everything needs tending. So I don't know. I feel like all holistic today, but basically that's what I'm saying, that I think that going back to your original question, which is, am I having a great moment? I'm like, yeah, I absolutely am, because I've sown these seeds and I've been watching these flowers grow in my garden. And right now it's in full bloom. Will it last forever? I don't know. We all have gardens. We don't know. Some things, you know, are annuals. Some are
You know, but right now the garden looks damn good. I just want to be out in it.
I always find that people who have theater backgrounds have a much more 360 degree approach to things. And please tell me if I'm wrong about this, because it seems to me that when you start in theater, and I didn't, but it seems to me that when you start in theater, the mindset is like, do whatever it takes to make the production work. So you might be in the play, but you also might have to pull the curtain or do the lighting or hand out tickets or make the programs, or like, you kind of just,
you got to care about the whole thing, not just your own shit. Exactly. You got to care about making the sausage together. You're like, I don't know how the sausage gets made, but we all got to make this together. But we're going to all do it.
And it's not just about being an ensemble for the group, but an ensemble as a working part of the ecosystem as well. Yeah. That's that ensemble too.
Well, I think I remember when I first started coming to LA from New York, and my agents would sit me down and have general meetings, and I would go all over town. And it would meet me, not as an actor, meet me as a creative. And they talk about what I want to do. I said, well, I think that what I'm itching to do is sort of bring the principles of theater into the television and film space. Because anytime I've been on TV sets or done films, I felt like it can use a little jolt of what we do in the theater, mm-hmm. which is really about community. Not being in our own silos. And I know that, listen, I know that I'm very conscious of it. I know that, like, let's say when I leave for the day on Fear the Walking Dead, I say goodbye to everyone. I make sure everybody's well taken care of, from transpo to PAs to you name it, that we're all a company. That it's not like the actors are never just in little silos. I'm like, hey, you know, I'm always looking out for seeing, hey, there's background chairs, if they're out there, whatever. I'm like, it's about how do I make sure they're taken care of, and they have to make sure I'm taken care of, and we all win. And I feel like a lot of times it's not set up that way in the systems of television and film. And so I do know that, like, their principles of just saying it's a community, we're doing it together. A lot of times we're not doing it for our worth, to be very honest. I think that's always a huge problem in the theater, and I think that has to change. That's a whole other conversation I'll be on a podcast with you for, I'm sure, where I'm talking about taking a sledgehammer to the American theater and changing when it comes to in demanding more, when it comes to pay parity, you name it, because I feel like it's a system in the not-for-profit world that does not work well, and it hasn't worked well for years. We shouldn't constantly saying that performers are barely being paid and, you know, got to do all these other things that are outside. You're like, cause it's not looked at as a profession, and it is a profession. You know, I think it's got to be respected like any other profession, and people have got to be taken care of. So that said, is because we've always lived with this sort of baseline of like, we're in it for the love, we're in it for the heart. We're not trying to, you know, we believe we could change the world. Getting paid $400 a week to do this show, 52 hours a week of rehearsal, you can't really do anything else. How are you going to make a living and survive? But we got the show. That's wonderful. And that's given us a lot of, you know, foundation of like taking care of each other, looking after each other. But there's a little balance that can happen, I think. I think that is a true North Star for theater artists. You do it because it's about the community and building something together and taking a leap of faith together. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But then my addendum to that is that people have preyed on that heart and soul of theater artists to pay them not their worth. You know what I mean? So that's a whole other thing that I need to unpack on the next podcast.
Well, I really think a lot about like, well, what is success? And, you know, like I do think that there are kind of warped ideas about, you know, sort of broad warped ideas about what success is as being a very external thing, a very material thing. And so, you know, when I say to you, you know, wow, you know, you're having this moment in your career, I also recognize that to me, when I look at all the work you've done, you've always been successful because you've always done, you've always made these choices. You've always, you know, pursued what you wanted and, you know, and made things happen for yourself. Now the dollar amounts might go up. They might, you know, like the visibility on some things might be greater than other things. I don't know if that necessarily makes them more any less successful. You know, like you've had this 31-year career where you've always, it seems like I've always gotten to do and always pursued what you wanted to do. And I'd look at that and I'd go, you've had 31 years of success. Do you feel that way? How do you define it?
I do. And it's funny because I had to sort of define it to my mother one time. You know, my mother was very supportive and loving and wonderful, but she would always, because success to her meant something different than it did to me. Eventually they matched up. But I remember, I always believed I was successful the first time I got paid to do what I love to do, which was act. Mm-hmm. It was at New Conservatory Theater Center in San Francisco in about 1992. And my first paid job, touring schools, doing this play, playing the lead, I was getting paid for it. And I was doing what I believed what my purpose was. That was successful. When I got my equity card, I felt successful. I got my SAG card, I felt successful. When I wrote a play and developed it and put it on stage, I felt successful. So there are all these moments of success that I believe I had. But then I would say someone who loves me, let's say my mom or my sister, would say something like, oh, I can't wait for you to get a break. Now, this is after I've maybe worked with, you know, done some amazing things in the theater that may not have been on their minds. But if I did something like, say, some show on the CW that didn't mean anything to anybody, I think they would have thought, he's made it now, you know? And so I would always have to push back. I'm like, nah, I think I'm successful doing what I'm doing. But I think that, like, I do recognize that this is a different sort of critical amount of success, because I feel like I have crossed over from being that guy that sort of shows up and does that, and we don't know what he's that guy, to having name recognition. But I love what it's now recognized for more than anything. It's exactly the course that I wanted. I want it to be recognized as a creator. I want it to be looked at as a multi-hyphenate artist. I want it to be looked at as a man who had principles, who respected craftsmanship, all those things. That I want to just be known. That was a very strong, to be very honest, when I joined a show like Fear the Walking Dead, I didn't want to be known as Coleman Domingo of Fear the Walking Dead. I can't just be limited to just a genre. That undermines all the other work that I've done. Because I think, you know, doing a Kander and Ebb musical was just as important to me. But the visibility of Fear the Walking Dead is much more than doing that Kander and Ebb musical. You know, so people want to just pigeonhole you and say, Fear the Walking Dead, Coleman Domingo. I'm like, nope, just Coleman Domingo, just an actor navigating, doing other things as well. So like even sometimes, and some fans that are probably listening, they probably realize that it's you that I'm talking to, that sometimes they almost don't want to allow you to be something else. They will just say, oh, you know, I'll post a picture of something that has nothing to do with about anything. Next thing you know, they're like, where's Alicia? You know, there's a lot of where's Alicia, blah, blah, blah. Strand is my favorite character. I'm like, yo, dude, this is about saving the whales. You know?
right. Well, that's, I know that's just fandom, and people just might just, you know, like just see that one thing and that's what they're very passionate about. And that's totally understandable and fine. And as long as you know, because a lot of people do know you from a lot of different stuff. And I think the most impressive thing about this career that you have crafted, and you have crafted, and you've made it, to say like you've made it, it's not just that you've achieved success. It's like, you've literally made it. You created it, you know, and to see the amount of intent, you know, is so inspiring, because again, it can be very easy to sit back and go, oh, I'm not getting the opportunities I want, or I'm not. And it's like, okay, sure. You can't control the external world. Have you done even one little thing today that moves you forward toward that goal? Yes. Do you know what that goal is? And ultimately, do you know who you are? And having, you know, to watch 31 years of that, I think is really inspiring, because it basically is a roadmap for anyone who feels like, well, you know, I'm just starting out, what can I do? Or I haven't been. It's like, you know, decide, figure out who you are, live career with intent, make choices that are meaningful to you. You know,
the wildest thing is I'm getting a lot of young men these days in particular saying, I want a career like yours. And I'm a teacher as well. You know that. And I would tell them, I said, I want a career. I want you to have a career like yours.
Exactly.
My career is a career that I've made, that I crafted. And I can say it, and I'm not saying this with any ego at all, but there was no career like mine to be made. There's no model for my career. There's no, I don't see a peer of mine who goes between different mediums in different ways as a writer, director, on different, you know, actor. I don't know of that person. But I knew that that's what I wanted to do. And I didn't want to be pigeonholed. And I didn't want to just be relegated to what people see. Because I think there could be, I mean, for the opportunities when I was first coming up in this industry, it wasn't that many that were that complex, you know, for a tall, dark-skinned Black man. And then who also happens to be gay, who also lives openly as a gay man, to know that I'd never want to be marginalized and just seen as a gay man in every single way. Someone who's very proud and very open. But I was also being very strategic in the choices that I made, how I presented myself, how I presented my work. Because I think at some point you're like, I have to change the narrative because I don't want the narrative to just be about my sexuality. That's not me. That's not the place where I live. I'm like, oh no, I can talk about that for a moment, but I'm not going to be your moment and be that thing that you amplify. So I will help steer course. The moment I was nominated for a Tony Award for a musical, I was like, I'm not the musical theater dude. You guys can calm that down. I kept getting offers to do musicals. I didn't work for a solid year. I started bartending again, and I waited until I did the right thing that I wanted to do, which was a play, which was the Otto Fugger play. I'm always telling students, listeners, whatever, be in control of what you're doing, and sometimes you have to take it back. You have to sit back for a moment and create the thing and put energy into the other thing to create the career that you want. I mean, and it has to be yours. It's like, my career is not designed off of anyone else's. Yes, I have people who I admire, but I'm like, oh, I want to craft it. I'm interested in these things. Let it come from inside out. Not, again, I'm not from the outside in. I don't work from the outside in. I always work from the inside out. What is my heart and my mind telling me to do?
Oh, that's such a great word. It's just like, I just get chills just even hearing that, working from the inside out, because it's so succinctly, it's such a great way to guide. It's just because you just ask that internal question when you come up against something that's like, well, what choice do I? Oh, well, if I'm coming from the inside out. So when people say like, I want a career like yours, it almost seems like, fine. That don't pay attention to the visuals of what you see of my career.
Yeah.
Have a career like mine in the sense that you live from the inside out and you follow what's meaningful to you and you make things and, you know, like that's how you can, and then and that's how you make your own path.
Absolutely. That's the only way. I think that's the only way. But I also think, like you said, you know, going back to something you said earlier, it requires you to really know who you are though, and to be fearless with that and to be honest with that, with who you are. And what you can sort of live with to be in this industry, because the industry will sway you to be many other things, to be things that are so not you, but just because it's marketable, maybe because you look a certain way and you think you can find some success in that way. I have some questions about some of my closest peers where I'm like, I think you're playing into that thing that's actually not you. I think you're playing into something because you look like the whole package of that thing. But you're actually much more interesting than that. I really would be interested if you went from the inside out and how the industry would respond to you, because I think they would have even greater success. Because I see them and they're frustrated. They're not getting cast the way they want because they want to do these other things, but they want to do the other things that these other people that look like them do. And I'm like, actually, you're much more interesting than that. You know?
Well, yeah. And you know, it's, the other thing about getting more opportunities and, you know, especially, you know, later in life than, you know, like 40s as opposed to 20s. The thing that I think is so interesting about it is that when people start to discover you and all these things start hitting at once, then they can really go down the Coleman Domingo path, you know, and go, oh my God, this, and discover all of these things that you've done. And I think it just creates this really solid foundation versus, you know, getting a hit show right out of the gate and being really materially successful right out of the gate, which is, I think, has less of a solid foundation. If that one thing goes away or you become too identifiable with it, it can make, you know, but to have this, you know, 30-year foundation of a career and people go, oh my God, and he does this and he's a musician and a writer and a director and a producer and an actor and stage and film and television. I mean, literally every aspect of the, pretty much every aspect of the business. I don't know. Have you ever had a radio show? Radio might be the only, have you done radio before?
I haven't done radio.
Okay, maybe, radio, maybe so
radio. You know, I always have plans for you and I. I always have plans for you and I to do something new. So we're gonna figure that out. Maybe it's a radio show.
It could be a radio show, or I loved the idea that you had pitched about, oh, you know what we should do? We should do like a variety show just to see like what people learned during the pandemic, like what skills they picked up during the pandemic, and just do like a talent show. I was like, oh, that's
I think they're going to want it. I think people are going to want it, Chris. I think they're going to want it from us. You and I co-hosting that, it'll be a riot.
I definitely, that would be a blast. But I also think you're one of those people that could win. And like you could do an EGOT. You know what I mean? Like you could do, because you work in so many different mediums. And, you know, when you got nominated for the Spirit Award this past year, it was like, yeah. And Lydia and I said to each other, like, Coleman's going to be one of those dudes. And I mean this entirely sincerely. He's going to be one of those people that is going to get, you're going to end up doing something and you're going to be on the Oscar ballot. And, and I think you can win. And I, you know, like, I don't know what you've got coming out. I don't know what that thing is, but I believe it to be the case. And I also feel like it won't change you in a negative way. Like to me, it seems like, you know,
I'm going to be a total asshole the moment I'm on the Oscar.
Chris, Lydia, it's Coleman. I'm pretty A-list now, so fuck you guys, and don't contact me again. But you know, would you say that as an amazing of an experience that would be, that you wouldn't trade it for that first job that you got in 1992 at the theater in San Francisco? You know, like that yeah. feeling. You know, like it is just part of the. It's a nice thing, but part of the journey.
I'm going to unpack that hopefully in a beautiful way. I've had to, I think a lot of times in my career, I've had to do some soul searching when sort of I was up for consideration for an award or something like that. And awards, I remember, I'll never forget this. I was at the Tonys. I swear, in my mind now, I think maybe it's taken on more color than it actually was. But I remember talking to some dude. Oh, it was at the party that was the night before the Tonys. And it was somebody else who was nominated. And, you know, I'm walking around just happy to be there, smiling like I always do. And this guy, I forget who it was. I feel like it was some legendary theater dude, was like, remember, it's nice to be feted. Don't get attached to the award. He said, it's about the reward. It's not about the award. He said, just be here. Enjoy it. He said, do me a favor. Enjoy the show tomorrow. Don't think about the award. Enjoy the show. And I sat there, I was like, man, okay. And I take that with me now with everything that I do. It's funny, because even recently, I remember, I'll be sincere with you. I remember people were like, Twitter was all ablaze recently in the last 6 months over my episode of Euphoria. And everyone was throwing Emmy around, Emmy nomination, Emmy. And I thought, yeah, the work is credible. I think the work is there. It's like, and I knew the work was there. It was solid. What Sam wrote was solid. What we did was solid with me and Zendaya, solid. Great reviews, everything. Now, I knew 4 months ago that our episode, I found out from my publicist that our episode didn't qualify. And I was like, why? That didn't make any sense. It's television, HBO. They couldn't I think Emmys couldn't figure out what category to put it in or something, because it was a bridge episode, so it's not part of season one or season two, and it's not limited really, because it is an ongoing show. And so therefore the work couldn't even be considered. So when I tell you, I had to choke down, because I got angry, and I'm just going to be sincere. I was like, wait, what? My work can't even be considered? It's some of the best work of my career, and I know it, because the work, and I'm just saying it, not even as an actor, the work was there. The writing was there. The direction was there. Everything was there. I'm like, it can't even be considered. It's bullshit. I even talked to the person who heads the Emmys, and I just let it be. And then I said, you know what? Well, Coleman, you have to reset yourself and think, like I've always had to do in these 31 years, what's the most important thing to you? And I realized that when I actually had that conversation with myself, I remembered this dude on Twitter who said, he said to me after the episode, he said, thank you so much for telling my story. He said, I felt like when you reached your hand out to Zendaya at the end, I felt like I could live another day. And this is the man who'd been sober, you know, for years. And I'm like, I get emotional thinking about that. And the commentary that people put on our work in that episode is so meaningful. And again, it helps reset me to think, this is what's important. If I get awards and nominations, that's all wonderful. I do love it. You want to be amplified. You want your work to be amplified, yes. But at the core, in my heart of hearts, I know that the way I touch people is the most meaningful thing, more than anything. And I'd rather have that. If someone said, would you rather have that be an award? I'd rather have that.
Yeah.
You know, because and at some point, the awards are coming. You can't deny people's work. You just can't. And I know that I know I'm very conscious of doing good work and giving my all. I do think I'll be at EGOT as well. And I think it'll happen suddenly, and it'll happen probably all at once, because that's the way my career goes. There's no gradual anything. Let's say suddenly all of it's happening. That's exactly the way I feel it will happen.
But it's not, but you know, what's in, but I think it probably feels suddenly, but it's, I think, you know, when you sort of look at a tree that bears fruit, and for years, nothing, nothing, nothing. And then all of a sudden it's like, there's like 100 lemons on this tree. You know, it's like all of the time and work and process that went into, you know, it might manifest all suddenly, but it was the result of, you know,
many
years of choices. And also I firmly believe that as nice as that will be and as amazing and deserved as that will be, like I said, I don't think it's going to change you. I think you're going to go, this is amazing. I'm still going to live the way you make the choices that I make. I still have the same directive. I might have, you know, different opportunities, but it's still, because you know who you are, I don't feel like the external thing is going to affect your internal purpose.
I know it won't, because I think, because I know who I am. You know, being 51, I think I know who I am in every single way. I surprised, apparently, my childhood friends, who they were together, I've known them since I was 14. They were together this weekend, and one of them decided to dial me. And they were having a good time. They were sweaty in Philadelphia, and they were like, hey, let's see if they'll pick up. And I picked up. And they're like, oh my God, you picked up? I was like, yeah, you called me. And they were so surprised. But you're a big Hollywood movie star. We thought you'd be on set. I said, you called. I'm available. Of course I picked up. You know, I love you. It's like, that stuff doesn't change, because that's the real stuff. And I think sometimes people get confused from the outside. They get confused and think that I'm always running around on red carpets. And I'm like, no, I'm actually sitting at home, you know, making a sandwich. I don't know. the beautiful thing is, I love where I live. I love my friends. Yeah, I probably have some better, I know the one thing that's changed with me. Yeah, I have a better car. I have a really nice car. That's what that stuff is for. You know, but when it comes down to it, I still go to the regular places. I still spend time with my friends, loved ones, and I know it won't change me. I hope it won't, but I know it won't, because I think I know myself.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
I say this on the podcast a lot as a gentle reminder for people who get really, you know, can get really caught up and overwhelmed, and just say like, hey, you know, just always try to remember that A, you are not your thoughts and you are not your career, you know, like you are you. Those are things, you know, like your brain will often tell you things to try to help you avoid discomfort. You don't always have to, you know, listen to it. Sometimes, you know, healthy choices might feel a little uncomfortable in the moment, and you're also not your career. So you don't have to feel defined by the uncontrollable whims of the universe. You know?
Yeah, dude. Yes. Chris, do you also think that, like, I have a question for you, because I think my door person asked me this a couple weeks ago, and I thought it was the weirdest thing. She was like, "So, Mr. Domingo, do you just, now that you know it's not a mask requirement, are you okay with going out without a mask?" I was like, "Well, yeah, I'm vaccinated, and I wear a mask like indoors and stuff when I need to." "No, I mean for your celebrity." And it's funny because like, I was like, I didn't think about stuff like that. I'm like, I never think anyone knows me when I'm going out. I'm just like,
I feel the same way. Right. Or I'm like,
do you feel the same way?
Yeah, of course I do. Like if anyone ever knows anything, I'm like, I watch your game show. You do? Wow, that's amazing. You know, or like, you know, like when people, like if someone comes over, you know, if I'm eating, they come over and go, "Oh, I didn't want to bother you." I'm like, why? Like, I don't mind. Like, this is very nice that you, you know, like, "Oh, I really liked, you know, the House of a Thousand Corpses," this is a horror movie that I did 20 years ago. "Oh my God, you know that? That's incredible. I can't believe you know that." Like, I am always so like just blown away by the fact that
anybody knows who you are. Right.
Yeah. Now, I mean, obviously, when we go to Comic-Con, we know like, well, that's a very specific world. So obviously, I would imagine if people come to a panel or a show, they probably know. But I don't feel like I don't feel arrogantly about it. I still feel surprised. Like, I can't believe I get to do that. Like, it's still, I never thought. And I think everyone feels that at the beginning of your career, like, oh, because you don't have anything to compare it to. Like, can't really picture. It's hard to really imagine that anyone would ever know or care anything I work on. And I feel like that never entirely goes away. So when people do know, it's like,
yeah,
holy shit, how do you know that? You know? And I feel like I wrote about it once a long time ago where there was maybe like, I don't know, 20 years ago or something, or maybe even longer. So, someone came up to me and they were like, "Hey, I know you, don't I?" And I think I was like, well, I'm on television, or like whatever my answer was, probably from this MTV show I do. And she was like, "Oh no, our moms are friends." And I just felt like such a douchebag.
Such a douche.
That it really, like, I think that really stuck, that really solidified. It was a great experience because it solidified in my soul. So like, don't ever assume, you know, like you don't know. And it's a gift. If anyone knows your work and they appreciate it, it's a gift.
It is. It's the casual things that confuse me though. But lately, a lot of times, I guess maybe I feel like I'm a bit more noticeable for some reason right now. And people are constantly doing things like, "Hey," and I'm like, "Hey," and I feel like I have early onset dementia because I don't know who they are. I'm like, I should know who they are.
Yeah.
And then I realize I'm like, oh, they know me, but they're acting very familiar. You know.
Yeah. 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 That can happen. And so, you know, I think it's nice just to, you know, just like be familiar with everybody. Like if someone reaches out to you familiarly, then reach out familiarly back. Even if you can't place, even if you don't know them, it's like, "Oh my God, how's it going?" You know, because they took the time to say hi and they, you know, like, and for whatever reason, something you did was meaningful and connective. And
that's true.
That is, you can't lose sight of that stuff. Cause it is it's such an odd business. And to see you again, creating all these opportunities in a business that things happen for ridiculous reasons. We have no control. Like you can be like about to shoot something and the production gets shut down, you know, like again, pandemic, you know, like we don't know. The fact that anything ever gets made to me is remarkable.
It truly is in every single way. It's a miracle, basically.
You know, this as a director and a producer, like you even have more experience with the fact that you see the sides of it that are like, "Oh my God, I can't believe it.
I can't believe we did
things happen." Yeah, exactly.
Right. I'm always nervous about everything. I'm like, yesterday we had a hold on set for like a lightning storm. And each moment you're like, "Are we going to be able to finish this? Or I don't know if we're going to be able to make this. Is it going to happen?" You know, so yeah, constantly.
And I think that's also you as a director just going, "Oh, you know," because even if you're not directing the episode, would you say that director impulse never goes away? Because
it never goes away.
I can't shut it off.
It never goes away. I've always been sort of like all eyes everywhere. And, you know, the directors I work with now, they understand that I'll just wander over and look behind camera and see what they're looking at. Just because and it's not that I'm trying to judge or direct anything, but I'm like, what's going on? What are you guys doing? Let's see that, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I do. I just have a feeling that you're the type of person that if someone were like, okay, Coleman, today we need you to be a real nuclear physicist, you would just roll up your sleeves and go, I'll figure it out. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like, I'll just get in there and figure it out.
But isn't it always that's our jobs too? I feel like we've always been, I guess, sort of troubleshooters or like, you know, I'm not afraid of like, oh, let me just, I'll get on Google and learn about that real quick and figure that out. Like, yeah, I feel like that's the nature of like a character actor though. It's like, oh, well, I guess I'll get as much information as possible and I'll make it happen. Like yeah. You said, hey, Coleman, could you handle, you know, making sure that that baby is born? I'm like, oh, let me, give me an hour. Just 1 second.
Give me an hour. That's a great title for a book, by the way. That's a great title for an autobiography. Give me an hour. I just need an hour. I'll figure it out.
Because any actor's like, let me just prep. Let me just work it out. I'll get on the computer and figure it out and research and we'll see what happens. That's the nature of a theater artist.
Yes. Oh my God. That's so great. I mean, I know we're approaching an hour, so I definitely want to I don't want to talk about it too much because I don't want to give anything away. I don't want to talk about specific story points, but Candyman, which Lydia and I watched and of course loved. It's such a great, what I think is so remarkable about it is that it has managed to find this really great balance between being its own film and extending the Candyman storyline while still remaining true to the original, but expanding the story of it. Do you feel that way?
That's the best way to put it, I think. Because I think people are like, oh, is it a remake? Is it this? I'm like, when Nia decided to call it a spiritual sequel, that's exactly what it is. That it's still in the same vein, the same zeitgeist of the Candyman mythology. But it's also doing something that's sly and more, I don't know, irreverent when it comes to looking at all the themes that links both Candyman sequels, the sequel and the original. And sort of like what people are, what's the terror that we're really walking in and living in? If you place it in like the Cabrini Green projects of Chicago again, right now during gentrification, and you're looking at trauma and terror. So I think that there's bigger themes going on, art, criticism, you know. I think there's many things that we're unpacking there. It's like Jordan Peele would do, which is unpack a whole lot and give you a lot to think about. Is he giving you that sort of scare, that jolt? Possibly, but in a different way. So I think it's like, yes, and then I think it's a great movie to watch a couple times because then you're unpacking things and seeing things in a different way. And I think has even more meaning, I think. I don't know. I want to ask you, but I don't want to give anything away either. Cause I'm like, I'm so interested in seeing how people respond to it. I know already it's going to be another, I don't know. I think it's a really, there's something about, I'll just say this. I've been blessed to be in a couple of films this summer, but like having Zola at the beginning and Candyman at the end tells us a lot, bridging a lot of the thoughts, theory, examination that we've had last summer in some way, when it's about race, when it comes to terror and trauma, appropriation, you name, I think it's unpacking a whole lot. So I'm really looking forward to seeing how people respond to this film, especially after all that we've been going through, you know?
And also the idea that, you know, because when a lot of times if someone takes an existing franchise or existing characters or whatever, like they might just ride on the coattails of like, oh, we'll just go with the recognition of this thing. But to take it and to then use it to make something meaningful, to take it in a meaningful direction is amazing.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it. It's almost like it's like a meaningful horror film.
Yeah.
Right. It's right. I think it's horror at its best. I think it's actually looking at, again, it's almost one of those things where I'm like, I'm almost scared to talk about it because I'm like, I'm more scared to talk about it than I am about saying Candyman, I think.
Well, you don't want to give anything away. Like you don't, because it's people should just experience it, you know, without going in any preconceived notions, I think is the best way.
Yeah, I think that's the way to go. Cause I feel like people keep asking me in some interviews, well, so can you tell me about your character? I'm like, sort of, but not really.
I mean, you know, and by the way, I come up against this all the time on Talking Dead, because I know that I ask questions that it's like, well, Angela can't answer this, or, you know, like, or, you know, like, or you or Alicia, or it's like, you can't, because that's going to spoil. It's going to give away.
Yeah.
And I know where it's going to net out is like, you just got to watch. Like, I can't. And you just like watch that internal struggle of like, I want to say, but if I do, then it's, I don't want to spoil anything. And even just kind of mentioning any specific story points, like, well, then that just kind of unravels the surprises that are in store.
Yeah. We'll leave it at that.
Is there, you know, like what else are you able to talk about that you're working on that you're excited about? Obviously, you know, the AMC show that you're doing, are you working on any more? And you said you're doing another theater piece that's going to open in London.
Yeah. Stax musical that I wrote last year is going to go up at the Young Vic in London probably next year. So we're readying that. That's using all music from the Stax catalog, like Otis Redding and Staple Singers and all. Johnny Taylor. And then let's see what else I got going on. I got, I'm actually going to shoot one more episode of Euphoria. And we're going to keep going with Fear the Walking Dead and see how long we can keep going with that. And then hopefully I'll have something that it's close to being announced. It's a film project that's very meaningful to me, where I'm going to play a real profound human being who's made a lot of changes in this world. So I'm getting myself ready for that. I'll tell you that offline.
Oh my God. I mean, that's amazing. What advice would you give people who, again, the same person who comes and says, I want your career. And you know what they're saying is like, I want to do all these roles. I want to do all these things that you're doing, or, you know, or they just sort of get impatient because they don't want to feel like they're, you know, struggling to make ends meet anymore. They're like, I just need to, what advice do you have to people to just, you know, staying on the path, staying true to themselves, you know, having internal motivation. How would you tell people to do that?
I think I'm going to tell it to you the way I told this one guy. And I was just in that kind of a mood. It was the realest conversation I've ever had with anybody who said, oh, I just want a career like yours. I said, you do? If you want my career, I want you to go all the way back and have the full career. That means many lean years. That means doing shows in regional theater, getting paid much less your worth. That means creating when there weren't opportunities for yourself. That means living in a illegal sublet in Harlem, you know, with, you know, crazy neighbors downstairs, you know, barely can afford rent, you know, trying to work and hustle, bartending, teaching, doing everything you can to maintain, to stay in this business. You are my career. I want you to want all of that. I want you to want when your parents both die in the same year and you still think you still got to get up and try to survive and build on something when you don't have anything. You're in unemployment, you have no opportunities, and you keep going, you keep going, and you keep pouring into your career. You keep creating where there's nothing to create. You bet on yourself. You do a reading, you put the money in yourself. You read it at the bar that you were working at and got them to donate that night to you so you can actually, you know, invite friends and print out flyers and get people to come see your work as you're starting to embark on being a writer. You have to invest in yourself. You have to believe in yourself. You can't wait. You can't wait for agents to do it, managers to do it. You've got to invest in yourself. You've got to constantly figure it out. But you've got to stay in it. And it can't be easy. I feel like none of my career has been easy. And there have been moments where it could have been a little easier. Someone could have opened a door or gave me a lift. I'm actually very grateful that they didn't, because I actually had to learn how to do it myself. I remember I wanted to shadow directors. For some reason, people kept blocking me from shouting. And then finally, I was like, no, I'm going to be a television director. It's going to happen. You just find another way. So I feel like you got to keep navigating your own path. And the thing that I'll tell anyone is like, no one can tell you not to create. I'll say it again for the people in the back. No one can tell you not to create. You have liberty to do it right now, wherever you are. And I think if you're waiting on something outside of yourself, you're not doing the job. If you're waiting to, well, you know, I'll wait until I get an agent, whatever. What you waiting for? You can create it right now. Especially now, you have YouTube, you have a phone. You can make a film. You can do whatever you want. You have an iPad. So what's your excuse? If you want it easy, this isn't the career for you. Go for the hard path. That hard path is going to be your path, you know, and I think it'll be more worthwhile. And you will always feel that, like, I know for sure, Chris, in every single way. And this is a personal thought that I have that I know I'm going to just make public. I know I've done this career on my own for myself. And it feels and I feel like my success, the things that I've built, I know it's because I did it, because I didn't wait. Because I didn't sit and just curl up in a ball when I could have, when I could have stopped. No, I kept going. And you can keep going. You just got to have, but you also got to find out the things that, you also got to have a full life too. And that's something I always tell my students. You got to have love. You got to have relationships. You got to want a garden. You got to want to know about art and art history and architecture and sciences. You need all that stuff to survive in this industry. It can't just be about this work. It's got to be about so much more so you can feed it into your work. Yeah. That's all I got to say.
I mean, that's a gorgeous sentiment. I mean, it's such great advice. I mean, I do go back and listen to podcasts, and I already have made mental notes of like, I got to go back. I need to write that down because you never, it's easy to forget stuff. Like, you know, like you really do have to constantly check in with where you're at, who you are. Are you still on the path you want? Are you still like, it doesn't just get figured out one day and then you never, it's like, you don't go to the gym once and go, well, I guess I'm in shape now. I went to the gym. It's like, you know, I said, you know, like I've had the same trainer forever. And I remember one time I was like, oh my God. So I'm going to probably like have to stretch and like work out for the rest of my life. And he's like, yeah, I mean, don't think about it all now. I mean, right. You don't have to, but you just have to know what that path is going to lead to. You're going to be inflexible. You're going to be sore. You're not going to feel healthy. You can do that. But, you know, if you want, don't take it all on now. But yeah, I mean, you can, it's like, yeah. I was like, man, so I got to like stretch all the time. Yeah, that doesn't. And it's the same thing with the emotional stuff. Like, yeah, if that's what you want, then you got
all the time. All the time.
Yeah,
all
that's right. You know, you got to keep checking in. But, you know, I just, again, I love you with all of my heart. And
I love you, my friend. Thank you.
And I cannot wait until y'all are back in town and we can see you and give hugs in person.
I want a hug. I want barbecue. I want us to have some burgers. You guys always make the best burgers. I've been missing your burger. I don't know what it is that you do or Lydia does, but I miss your burger. That sounds weird. I miss your burger. But that sounds weird. Chris, I really miss your burger.
I really miss your burger. I like you, but what I mean, it would be nice to see you. Could you FedEx me a burger? Could you make a burger and send it? Because that's really, no, we will absolutely make burgers for you. Cool. And, I hope you get back soon. And by the way, I just want to let people know that, Candyman, is in theaters August 27th. That is the end of the podcast. The end.
ID10T scanning complete. Enjoy your burrito.
Behind every successful business is a story, and some of them might surprise you. Like how Chobani's first yogurt factory was discovered on a piece of junk mail, or how the founder of the multi-million dollar cosmetics brand Drunk Elephant was told by everyone, including her own mother, that the name sounded like a dive bar. I'm Guy Raz, and on my show How I Built This, I talk to founders behind the world's biggest companies and brands to learn the real stories of how they built them, In each episode, you'll hear entrepreneurs share moments of doubt and failure and talk about how they were able to overcome them on their way to the top. How I Built This is like a masterclass in innovation and creativity, a how-to guide for navigating life's challenges from the people who've done it all. Follow How I Built This on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to How I Built This early and ad-free right now on Wondery Plus.